You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
Another episode of the X-Man Podcast. I'm your host, Doc Coyle. I greet you from sunny and very hot Las Vegas, Nevada. I'm here with John and Max from Bad Wolves, and we're writing tunes for the next Bad Wolves album, even though our last record is not even a year old. Actually, not even, yeah. I don't know, like 8 months old, maybe. And it's some serious days out here. We pretty much go. We did this like a month ago. We do 6 days, no days off, from like 11 to 7 every day, and it's pretty. It whoops your ass, you know, because just being kind of locked in and concentrated and really gripped into work for that time. But it's cool. It's an interesting process, you know. I think that. When you start getting to that third record, fourth record, fifth record, and you've done a lot, and you're trying to, understand and pay homage to what the band is, but also stretch yourself creatively, it's a process, you know, and it's been stressful and emotional and fun and exciting, but also, like, I think it's that thing where the more you get into it, you start kind of finding all kinds of new and interesting stuff. So I can't really speak to what it'll be, you know, because I still feel like we're pretty early in the process. But it's a tough thing, you know, to try and be in there and go, you know, and not try and think about a listener, you know, and just write for yourself. And especially when you got three people and people who are not in that room who might have an opinion on what you're doing. And figure out what exactly you want. So, but it's been fun. We got some jams. I will tell you that. But it's been a kind of difficult time for me lately. I've been dealing with some depression, if I'm being honest. And you know, I think there's, you know, not that I'm saying this from a clinical or any level of expertise, but that I think, you know, for me at least, or what I kind of understand is there's kind of two kinds of depression. There's the one that's chemical and kind of not necessarily out of your control, in your control without some medication, something like that. Or, you know, the type of depression that is really pertaining to what's going on in your life. And in many ways, it can be a wake-up call, you know, that you maybe need to do some emotional, mental house cleaning and kind of figure out where you're at. And that's what this kind of experience has been. And for me, it's kind of periodic depending on what's going on. And it's interesting because I feel like I'm in a place now that in many ways is similar, I think, to some of my times in God Forbid, where I think the environment that Bad Wolves is in and that's been created is in a weird way is something I wasn't looking for, you know, because at the time Bad Wolves kind of took off, it was actually at a time when I wasn't putting a lot of gravity into like having to make it as a musician. And it kind of happened without too much crazy effort on my part, if I'm being honest. And in a weird way, Bad Wolves has now had to fight for our career in a way that's very grueling. You know, it's been a slog, and I think that puts me in a weird headspace where I'm like, I want to make everything work out, and so I just work and work and work and burn myself out trying to like solve everything, and I can do it. You know, there's this kind of like Superman mentality about, I got this. I'm going to work so hard that I can't be stopped. But unfortunately, I think there's a lot of, there's a fallacy built in that, which is A, that we can control everything, especially when it's about, you know, it's a collective, right? A band is a collective. There's only so much one person can do. And also, you can't control, I can't control the fans, or I can't control, you know, you can't make things happen. You know, the, you know, sometimes, and so I think there's this almost like Buddhist type of mentality about the way through is to not try, right? To like the way to happiness is actually to not get caught up in desire, you know? And so I think a lot of times when I'm like in that mode and I'm grinding and I'm making things happen, I'm hyped up, it's very, it is ego-oriented and ego-driven, because you need that person, that that ego who believes in the impossible to kind of drive the ship. But I noticed that it was making me, I started to feel really disconnected from family, from friends. I still kind of feel disconnected. And everything becomes about ambition and work and doing some kind of far off great thing. Everything has this broader purpose. And I feel like it really, it has these diminishing returns, because then all of your happiness revolves around other outside validation, right? It's like, oh, because you work so hard to get this goal, if the goal doesn't come true, then you're not going to be happy, you know? And so I don't know. I'm in this like reevaluation process of going, I don't want to make the same mistakes I made before in life, you know? So, you know, I've taken a step back from drinking. Not that I think drinking was my main problem, but I think I need an extra bit of clarity. And kind of, you know, drinking is a great way to not have to deal, you know, and I got to deal, you know, I got to be a little uncomfortable, you know, but I already feel better, even though that there, it comes with kind of this requisite anxiety and kind of like, you know, these other emotions, you know, that are kind of, and that's kind of like enveloping through like our writing process, for example, you know, this, you know, writing music is so personal, you know, and it's like a piece of yourself, and you're protective of that. And that it's tough in these, collaborative environments where, like I said, battles has never been, I've never been the guy as the writer, even though I have been that person in other environments. And that takes like, to be that person and kind of be in a supplemental role takes a lot of patience and discipline. And so I don't know. I just, want to let you guys know where I was at, which was a very interesting place, but I think ultimately a healthy place, you know? And there's a lot of cool stuff coming with Bad Wolves, man. We're gonna be touring through the rest of the year. And we just dropped a song called The Body, which is weird, like it's being like pushed out like it's a single. It's not really a single, it's a kind of a deep cut. I always thought it was like a deep cut, but we just had an extra song. We're doing this EP for the Sacred Kiss single. That's going to be the actual single. It's going to be going to radio, which is the opening track from the last record. And there's a two B-sides on there, one of which I think is better than The Body. So it's kind of, I don't know. I don't always get to choose these things. But I like The Body, but I like some of these other songs even more. And I think it's like an alternate version of Sacred Kiss. There's some cool stuff on the EP. So lots of touring, and we're working on new music. So that's fun. Alrighty. We have a couple show sponsors this week, because that's just, that's how it goes sometimes. And this is a band called Mother Mercury, and they actually sponsored the show months ago, but the song wasn't ready, and it finally is. So I'm you know, was holding a slot for them, so I'm finally glad we got to play their song. This track is entitled Run by Mother Mercury.
The sun goes down, we'll take no one's around.
So you just heard Mother Mercury with their brand new track entitled Run, and they are from Las Vegas, where I currently am, and I enjoyed that song. It had some proggy elements to it. I really enjoy that singer. She has like kind of a soulful rock thing happening that is really enjoyable to listen to. The band features former Third Strike guitarist Eric Carlson as the primary songwriter and producer. I saw Third Strike at, I want to say, Ozfest 2001. They were like a shortly lived rap rock band from back in the day. They were cool. And this band has played the last two iterations of Psycho Festival. Isn't it Psycho something? I feel like that's not the full title of the festival. Anyway, the Psycho Festival in Vegas. And the single is one of a series of singles they'll be releasing throughout the rest of the year. I looked up on Spotify and they do have an EP from 2018 entitled Rain. Check that out. And if you want to check the band out, go over to their Facebook page, Mother Mercury Music. Or facebook.com/mothermercurymusic, or their website, which is mothermercurymusic.com. All right, check them out. Really appreciate them sponsoring the show, especially after such a long wait. I appreciate that. And our second sponsor is from a band from the Netherlands called Lovell's Blade. That took me a few times to say properly. And yeah, they are really, really cool. And this track is entitled Running Out of Time. Check it out.
Down and vanish into sight.
So there you have it. That was Lovell's Blade with their new track, Running Out of Time. That was a lot of fun. It was like power rock, you know? It's almost like some Thin Lizzy meets some like Hagar era Van Halen with some, you know, European flair. But that was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed that track. And yeah, these guys started in 2016 from the ashes of a band called Picture, a Dutch metal band, and they've released three albums, but their latest album, Deadly Nightshade, just came out in March of this year, and they do everything on their own, the writing, recording, artwork, photography, you name it, and their music videos, which is badass, you know, they're self-sufficient, and the guys from the band come from bands like Picture, which I mentioned, God Dethroned, who actually God Forbid toured with back in 2005 with The Haunted, great guys, Detonation, Emergency, and Nembryonic. That's a metal name. This album was released through No Dust Records. You can go check it out at nodustrecords.com from the Netherlands. If you're in Europe, if you're in USA, it's available through Animated Insanity Records and animatedinsanityrecords.com. Check it out. There's black vinyl, CDs, tapes. Damn, they're doing tapes. If you'd like to support the band, please go over to their Bandcamp, which is levelsblade.bandcamp.com, or their website, levelsblade.info, and that's spelled L-O-V-E-L-L-S, Blade. I guess it's officially in the actual title. It's with an apostrophe, but there's no apostrophe when you're obviously typing it into your web browser. So thank you so much to Mike Ferguson from the band and that band for sponsoring this show. That was a lot of fun. I wish them all the luck in the world. And if you'd like to sponsor a show, shoot me an email at thexmanpodcast@gmail.com. I think it might be a couple week wait, but we can probably get you on. Anyway, with all that done, sorry for the long intro. It happens. And, you know, I'm recording this in this room and there's like a loud air conditioner. Hopefully it's not too loud on the recording. I have some technology to lessen it, but hopefully it just sounds normal. But yes, we have the almighty legendary Max Cavalera on this show. And he needs no introduction. Sepultura, Soulfly, Nailbomb, Killer Be Killed. I got no notes. You know Max Cavalera. He is one of the metal gods, obviously. Big influence on me. And the opportunity came to speak with him. Of course, I jumped right at it. Just a fair warning. We get cut off a little bit near the end. And that's because I was only supposed to have a half hour. Which I knew, but sometimes you get an interview and I'll ask, hey, I think our time's up. And then the person will go, hey, they'll go, hey, you know, we're fine. Let's just keep going. So usually I go until someone cuts me off and I got a little yelled at the end. But as they say in life, it is better to ask for forgiveness and not permission. So I apologize, but I got about an extra 10 minutes in this, so I'll take it when I can get it. And Max was just really incredible on here, and I hope you guys enjoy it. So here, check out my conversation with the legendary Mr. Max Cavalera. Thank you so much for taking your time to be on the show.
Of course, yeah. Everything good?
Yeah. You know, I'm busy as all hell. I was actually at your show in LA a couple weeks ago. It was incredible.
Yeah, that was a fun tour. It was a real real exciting. Just playing the old stuff felt like back in the day. You know, like felt like the 90s, man, all over again. It was incredible. Really cool tour.
Well, what stood out to me, not only just seeing you guys, was the crowd, right? So I remember like pulling up, and you know, it's like it's LA, so you got the Mexicans are coming out, you know, they're geared up, they got their battle vests, they're pre-gaming, yeah. They're so excited, and it was probably one of the crazier crowds I had seen in a while in terms of just people in the pit and the intensity. Was it like that the whole tour?
Pretty much, man. It was a fucking I mean the Maryland Death Fest was incredible because that was one of the coolest experiences because we didn't have that much time. They gave us like, I think like 50 minutes.
Yeah.
And we had to put two records in 50 minutes. It was like, okay, we cannot do that.
You're playing twice as fast.
That's what happened. So Igor played super fast and I didn't talk to the crowd. So it was like, it was a pure savagery, man. It was like fucking savage. No talk, fucking just like, have you ever seen the Ramones back in the day?
I never did. I'm only 41, so they probably were broken up by the time I was going to shows.
Right. So the Ramones, there's videos of it, and we got to tour with them. The Ramones used to do that shit, man. They'll fucking go for like 45 minutes, song after song, without talk. There's no, hey, how you guys doing? What's up? No. It's like, 1, 2, 3, 4.
That's right. You don't listen.
It's incredible. When you do it right like that, it's something happens. And that was our Maryland Death Fest experience. After the show, people were just like, what the fuck did I just witness? What the fuck was that? That was insane. This is like, it was like band guys. That's what was cool. It was like all people from bands telling us how great this show was, you know? But definitely that what you talk about, the fans coming out in hordes. We didn't knew that this nostalgic feeling for those records was that strong until we did the tour and we actually like witnessed how much people actually fucking love this era. You know, this is an era of metal that a lot of people really love and they want to hear it right. And maybe it has something to do with the pandemic, people being pent up and, you know, anxiety,
sure,
anger. Those songs are perfect for that. Like, maybe that has something to do with it. I don't know. But most of the shows felt a lot like the LA show. Almost on an every night basis was always like really, really cool reaction. People loving the shows and it was an exciting tour to be part of it for sure. Because I love playing with my brother, but also Danny did great on the guitar, you know.
So who's Danny? I didn't know him, but he played great. He did all the solos and stuff. So he played perfectly.
Yeah. Danny mostly plays with Possessed. He's okay. A Possessed guitar player. He also plays with Gruesome.
Okay.
But we were trying to find somebody that was knowledgeable of this music, that knew about these records like the palm of your hand. Like you know this shit. You know every single note of this stuff, and you play it right. You play it perfect, and he's a real real good guy, really cool guy, and he looks awesome too. You know, so for the first time, I had me, Mike, and Dan. We all had hair. The three of us. There's a lot of hair going on.
I know,
except
man.
For Eagle.
It's old. It definitely felt very, very old school. And you know, myself and so many people, I think we grew up on these records. And you know how music is, right? Things go in cycles. You know, in terms of things being popular, and then it goes out of style, comes back in style. It's interesting because you know the band Power Trip. I remember when they came out. To me, that's what they sounded like. It sounded like, oh, this is a Rise era, like Sepultura type of band, and they blew up, which tells you like people were pining for that kind of classic sound. I have a question. What is it called? Is it Cavalera Conspiracy? Is it the Cavaleras? Is it Max and Igor Cavalera? Is there I've seen different things like what is actually the band is called.
We don't have a name. Band with no name.
A band with no name. I love it. I love it. But why not use the Cavalera Conspiracy moniker? Is there like legal stuff with that or?
Nah, I mean, what ended up happening, somebody created the Cavalera font with the old school Sepultura font. Yeah. And it looked badass. And we loved it. We're like, dude, that's fucking killer. I love that. So we put that on a shirt and it looked like an old school shirt. And it was like, let's roll with that, man. That looks cool.
Worked for Van Halen, right?
Yeah. And it's like, really these tours, they don't really have a name. I mean, Return to Roots was called made more sense. This one was called, it was kind of funny. When I first heard it, I was like, what, really? So it's called Return Beneath Our Eyes, which is really wrong English, right? doesn't really make sense, but we had to call it something. So Return Beneath Our Eyes. So, I mean, when we do chaos, it could be Chaos Returns, you know, you can do something like that.
That was going to be my next question, because Chaos AD is my favorite album. You know, there's just something special about that. So that is in the plans.
Yeah, yeah. So eventually we like to do most of them or all of them if possible. You know, we can always, I'm excited for two in particular. Of course, the early stuff, because it's the rawest form of black metal, with the, you know, the very, very early things like Bestial and Morbid. And then, of course, Chaos AD was definitely a groundbreaking record for a lot of people, for influence, many, many bands, many people. Still today, I think that Chaos AD was a lesson in as far as learning how to make a record with Andy Wallace producing, which was an amazing producer. So that's going to be like a cool one, but I'm kind of learning to really enjoy working with people I like, you know. So specifically the best thing was the Soulfly record with Totem, working with Arthur. Arthur was the, you know, he recorded Power Trip, Nightmare Logic, you know, so he's the responsible, pretty much. He's the secret weapon behind Power Trip's
sound
record.
Yeah, the sound, you know, actual tone.
He's responsible for that. So I was like intrigued by that. And I was like, I like Arthur a lot. We like a lot of the same music. We talk a lot about, have the same styles that we like. And he is able to get stuff out of me that I normally cannot do it on my own. You know, it's like therapy, you know, you go to therapy to talk to somebody because it doesn't come out of you naturally, but the therapists know how to get that out of you. You know, yeah. You pull all the fucking right chords, push all the right buttons, the fucking shit comes out. So that's how I was working with Arthur on Totem. It was an incredible fucking experience, man. What an amazing thing. Like making a record that is done today, that has a soul and a spirit that came from 89, but has a savagery of early days, but with the sound of right now, because you have the best guitar sound you can have, you have the best drum sound you can have. So you have that, you put that together with experience and together with crazy ideas that we all had in the studio. You get a fun record. I think Totem is going to be fun. In fact, it's the probably like the closest thing to early stuff that I've done in a long time is actually Totem. You know, it's like the really, really a throwback, especially the side A. If we're going to talk old school, let's talk vinyl. So side A is a killer. I think when we play live, I think we should just do, start a show, play side A like nonstop, play the whole side A. Of course, the digital people are like, what the fuck is talking about? Side A, what is this guy talking
vinyl's,
about?
Vinyl's back, all right? Vinyl's back. People are people line up.
I'm old school, man. I mean, like, have a phone, but fucking,
you're lucky. You know, you're lucky.
I look at records like side A, side B, you know, that type of shit.
What did you guys have a lead guitar player for this record, or did you just do it as a three piece?
No, so what we did was really interesting. I was very into Arthur's band. They're called Eternal Champion.
Yeah,
he plays in two bands, Eternal Champion and Summerlands. They're very heavy metal, man. Purist, you know, traditional. I'm talking Angel Witch shit. Yeah, fucking full on. Yeah. But the solos are fucking amazing. Like the solos are like Randy Rhoads shit, you know? So I was like, dude, those Randy Rhoads solos on a Soulfly record would be fucking epic, Arthur. Can you make it happen? And so him with his guitar player called John Powers. He's a guy that plays with Eternal Champion. They did the mostly majority of the solos on the record, but just the two of them. On the last track, Spirit Animal, we have Chris from Power Trip playing solos.
Okay.
And Chris is a great instrumentalist. He plays everything, you know. I love Mammoth Grinder, like the side project he has. It's fucking killer. And he's a shredder. He can fucking shred.
Yeah.
So Arthur knows him from making the Power Trip records. And yeah, here, there's a track, man. Go fucking nuts on it. Go, you know, do your thing. So he did that. And to me, what feels really cool about Totem is actually because of that. The old school Randy Rhoads guitar style of solo on an album that's more 90s death thrash felt really cool, man. And I think it felt different, fresh. We needed that. And, you know, we are actually using Dino Live right now as far as the touring is concerned. You know, we did a tour early this year with Soulfly, and we had Dino, and everybody loves Dino. And
I went to the Whiskey show, and that's about as good as I think the band has ever sounded, the tightest. I mean, obviously his tone.
You play that, right?
What's that?
Your band play, right?
No. I was just there. I was just hanging out. I was just hanging out. And it just, you know, the Whiskey, the sound there could be kind of hit or miss depending on which day. So I don't know who was doing your guys' sound, but it sounded so heavy, man. It was amazing, you know?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it is the Dino sound, man. That dude is, he's a wizard as far as chunky guitars.
Exactly.
I told you we should go get Chug Life tattoo in our bellies, you know, fucking, because he's got that Chug, that Fear Factory machine, fucking
one of a kind, man, one of a kind.
Yeah, his right hand is fucking incredible, man. I try to watch. I watch him warm up every show. He'll be playing Fear Factory songs in a bus, and I'll be just in awe, like. I'll be like a fucking, like a teenager. Oh, this is so cool, you know? He's like, this is awesome. And keep playing, you know? But yeah, like his right hand is fucking insane. And the sound, he has that Dino sound that's very unique, original. And when we put that with Soulfly, it was kind of like a match made in heaven, man. It was perfect. So I think some of the songs never sounded this brutal. Like No Hope, No Fear, and Eye for an Eye, even like Downstroy with a chugging in the end. It was like, fuck, this is fucking sick, man. Like I was really excited when Dino joined to do the tours. You know, I was like total fucking, I'm a huge Fear Factory fan. So to me, it was like one of my, you know, bucket list type things, get to jam with Dino. And that kind of gave an idea that it might be kind of cool to do more shit like that with Soulfly. So maybe for the future tours, we just get together with people that we like from other bands or some guitar players that are kicking ass, and we can just do that. And the fans love it. We fucking get to play with some really cool person, and the song sounds amazing, you know? So yeah, I think we're going to continue on that idea. But we have a show in Japan in August, and Dino is doing that with us, so that should be cool.
Welcome to us talking about our podcast for a minute.
What's the name of that podcast?
That's Axe to Grind, and right now you're going to be getting a little taste of it, right down to the shaking microphone and all.
And my name's Bob.
And my name's Patrick, and usually we're joined by Tom.
Tom's the best. Tom has a real grown-up job that requires him to be at work, but we talk about decidedly not so grown-up things like
hardcore music and things that people that like hardcore music tend to like.
So that could be the latest shows, revisiting classic material, talking about the new classics, all the little dorm room nonsense that you imagine from a niche music podcast that you either love want to love or hate.
Yeah, imagine all the emotions that you have towards a genre that has impacted your life, and then condense them down to an hour to 2 hours a week.
So triangulate your speakers. Think about jumping off the bed, singing along, dancing like an idiot, and listen to Axe Grind Podcast.
Hey, this is Steve Choi, host of the Musicians Guild Podcast, part of the Sound Talent Media Podcast Network. Within the four walls of the Musicians Guild, we'll be discussing the habits, idiosyncrasies, experiences, and general psychology of my friends and peers all involved with music in various capacities. Listen and subscribe at soundtalentmedia.com.
Hey, what's up? My name's Lurk, and I'm the host of Lambgoat's Van Flip Podcast. Every week, I have in-depth conversations with bands from all over the scene, big and small. We also like to keep our finger on the pulse and showcase up-and-coming bands on the show as well. So come check out Lambgoat's Van Flip Podcast.
Well, I have a question about your gear. You have a sound, you know, that, you know, has been fairly consistent through the years, even though there's, you know, differences between the records and all that. Have you been using the same like amp and like, you know, pedal combination, or do you kind of like flow with the times?
I'm being a PV guy for 30 years.
Really? So what? Yeah. Which amp though? You some different amps or the same one?
Mostly 6505. I'm a huge fan of the 6505s. And it's like we figure out a way that just sounds good all the time. And PV has been really good to me. They give me a lot of cool gear through the years. And I met Mary PV, the owner, you know, it was cool. It was like a NAMM show a couple years ago. She's this like real nice old lady. And she kind of knew who I was a little bit, you know, kind of like, yeah. She's Mary Peavy, man. Fucking, you know, Van Halen shit, you know?
Do you use any pedals or is it just the amp?
I have three pedals that is part of my old school collection that I have since probably around the Roots days was when I first bought it. So it's a flanger. Auto Watt. I don't think they make that anymore. It's a Boss Auto Watt. And my sound man fucking hates it because when you hit that thing, it's louder than anything. It's like, wah! It's like killing a rat on a stage. You know, it's obnoxious. It's an obnoxious machine. And then I have a little. It's a phaser that sometimes does really weird space type sounds. I use a little bit, not much.
Yeah.
But most of the street, that's all the things I need. I don't, mostly the meat potatoes from the 6505. I need, man.
And the hands, it comes from the hands, right?
It does, man. You know, it's all about how you want it, how you feel the song and you play and it really like, I don't know, especially for if you're playing, the stuff like we're doing Arise and Beneath the Remains, it's all E, right? You're all E standard.
Yeah.
There's no drop tuning involved. Drop tuning is kind of a cheating way to get heavier. You're cheating a little bit because you're getting lower and heavier. There's something about the E standard tune that's fucking cool. Like that's why.
Well, it's the punch. It's the punchiest sound. It right. Cuts through the best. The bass actually sits in this place it's supposed to sit, and you're just gonna have so much more clarity. And I feel like the guitars were built for that tuning, so they just set. It sounds the most powerful and punchy. And then you gotta write heavy parts for that tuning to make it sound heavy. And it's all about what you're doing as like composers.
Yeah. So that's why, you know, Slayer stuff, most of it is E standard.
E flat. Slayer's E flat.
E flat, right. And then, you know, Power Trip was all
standard.
E. Yeah, and I think when you do, what I noticed on the Arise Beneath tour, besides the fact that Igor's playing everything three times faster. I joke and I say, why did we even practice with the album? Stupid. Like, you playing the shit like fucking, you just drink 10 Red Bulls in a row and you're fucking going off, man. You're taking off. But what I noticed that, the e-guitars, you're right. It cuts through. It fucking cuts right sharp, man. If you do it tight, you know, because we were trying to get as tight as we could on that tour. It was kind of ridiculous. Like, I was joking, like, we got to have be mosquito ass tight, you know, fucking psh, 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 psh. Yeah, everything like in between those tights, like silence, like nothing, you know.
Yeah.
I think we did it pretty good. I think on that tour it was like we reached a good amount of tightness.
I thought it was extremely tight.
I think we by the time we hit LA, the earliest stuff, the first shows were a little bit,
yeah,
just the beginning, you know, just getting the rust out. But
sure.
But yeah, I love it. I mean, I love low tuning too, man. I love B. You know, like in fact, a lot of the death metal that's done right now, it's all tuned to B. Stuff like 200 Stab Wounds and Undeath, you know, I talk to those cats and they're all like, yeah, B, we all tuned B, fucking caveman shit, you know.
Yeah, it's like carcass at the gates, they're in B.
Yeah, entombed. You get that fucking heavy metal to B sounding fucking, you get a heaviness out of it. So I'm conflicted between which one I like more. I don't know. Sometimes I like B more. I think it's like heavier.
Yeah.
But then you do a show like Beneath the Remains and that shit sounds fucking sharp and super tight. And I don't know. It depends. I think it depends on what record you're playing too. Sure. You know, it's good for those records and it's good for the carcass kind of stuff for the heavy parts. I like all. I think this is like the cool thing about guitars. It's like no rules. Just try everything, man. You know? Try different tunings, try pedals, try. That's what I like. The guy from U2, he said that somebody asked me if he thought that you know, using pedals was like cheating in making music. And he said, "No, man, it's actually a tool, you know? It's actually a tool that you put on your sound. If you can get something cool on a pedal, why not you put that on a record? If you got something that came out of a pedal that makes a cool sound, use it, man." I love that, you know. So the more different stuff you can get, even that band Torch. Have you ever heard that band Torch?
Yeah, I saw them at Orion Festival, Metallica's festival in New Jersey.
Right. Yeah. So they're really cool. Like the thing they do with the low string.
It's yeah, like, I don't even know what that is. I was trying to figure out what the hell that was. I was like, what
I'm
is
sure
that
there's
sound?
A name for it. We're just lame. We just don't know the name of it. But I'm sure there's a name, but you know, the low string. Blah, 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 blah.
Yeah. I was like, what is I couldn't figure it out, but it was fucking crazy.
Cool, man. I love when people.
Yeah, you gotta have, you know, I'm the same way. I you can't see right here on my floor, I have a ton of pedals. I'm always trying things, and I love just getting different sounds because it's part of your creative expression, you know. And some of my favorite guitar players are great with guitar effects. I just had a question about your playing specifically because, you know, there was all these evolutions, right, from the old stuff that, you know, was almost death metal, and then the super thrash, then Chaosity with the groove metal and hardcore, and then Roots is kind of more new metal and some of the early Soulfly stuff, which is almost like the more new metal groove stuff is almost, not that it's supposed to be loose, but it's a different feeling. Was there like a process of when you're going back and playing this Beneath the Remains Arise stuff with like just your chops and getting the speed and kind of the tightness of the right hand, was that something you had to work on or you continue to work on? Or is that something that you kind of, because I mean, Soulfly for at least the last 10 years has been kind of back to doing the thrash stuff. So is it, or are you already kind of locked in with that?
Yeah, it's a bit like riding a bicycle as far as guitar.
Yeah,
it goes. If I start playing thrash, triplets, chugging stuff comes naturally, feels yeah. very naturally. But there is something cool about the minimalistic new metal riffs. Yeah. I really like it. I was really listened to a lot of the when the first Korn drop was great, you know, like they had a lot of that. Like the riffs were simple, almost like, in a way, you can actually trace back. I think the feeling that you get from the Korn record is almost like back to caveman riffs. They're actually more simple than thrash yeah. riffs.
Yeah.
Thrash riffs are more intricate, you know, they're more sure. like difficult to play. And new metal kind of riffs are a little easier, loose, just kind of open, bam, bam, boom. You know, it's like, it's fun. I like all of it. To me, it was like when that style came, I remember listening to Head PE. I really liked the Head PE record. And of course, Deftones was a huge one.
Sure.
I love Stefan's sound and riffs still today. It's great, right? And I think Adrenaline, to me, one of my favorite records of all time. Still,
absolutely.
Still today, Around the Fur, too. It's like fucking masterpiece, man. It's fucking great. But the same can be said to the early thrash stuff. You know, who doesn't like Raining Blood? Or who doesn't like, especially to me as a fan, the old Morbid Angel, Entombed. Those records, to me, is pure magic, you know, on some of those riffs. It's just, I tell you what, man, being a guitar player is all about the excitement of the journey. And I'm a blessed person that I got to be part of different music movements through my life. I think it's great. I would have rather have that than if I was just locked in the same movement forever. Like if I was only playing just thrash my whole life, to me that would have been a bit boring. And I got to experiment black metal, thrash metal, death metal, groove metal, industrial metal,
yeah,
tribal metal, you know, all kinds of fuck what metal, you know, like whatever name you yeah. give.
Or even like something like Killer Be Killed, which I think is even doing something even different, which is combining some like rock elements in there and some more yeah. like melodic playing. Is that kind of interesting where in a band like that, where you sing obviously sometimes, but a lot of times you're just playing, is that fun to just kind of sit back and kind of watch these other guys sing for a little bit and you can just be a guitar player for a minute?
Yeah. I mean, Killer Be Killed, the first record, I play like 90-95% of the guitar, the whole record,
yeah.
like all the rhythm. You know, we had a guy come and do solos, but I did all the rhythm. And I remember the producer was like blown away, like how tight the rhythms were, you know? And I was like, yeah, I'm a rhythm player, man. You know, that's what this is my bread and butter, you know? This is what I do, man,
yeah.
with four strings, you know? This is my thing. But yeah, it's a little bit more challenging I push myself a little further on Killer Be Killed because I write more melodic riffs that the guys can sing, because I know Troy's got a great voice and Greg's got a great voice.
Yeah.
Those motherfuckers can sing, you know?
Absolutely.
So there's a challenge to make not pop, but real cool melodic hooks. So that was like the last record, I think, something hero. I forgot. I have so many records. I forget the names of it.
I know. I don't know how you do it. You know, it's like
yeah man. But it's fun. It's fun to push yourself like that and actually like I get to write. So and sometimes they come to me and they're like, man, we need one of your old school Max riffs. You know, Greg will be like, we need one of those. You know. Reapers, man, give me one of those fucking triplets. So that was the case on the first song, Self-Destruction. Deconstruct, Self-Destruct starts with a triplet, turn, 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 turn. And I haven't done that in a while. You know, I think last time I did something like that was a Downstroy on Soulfly, you know?
Yeah.
So I was like, yeah, you guys want some of that? Yeah, I got, yeah, check this out. You know, and they were like, yeah, this is so cool, man. You know? So yeah, I love the challenge. And on the same record, I end up writing real melodic stuff. Like, there's a song, it was a bit of a throwback to like real melodic, so it's clean guitar. So I was actually jamming on acoustic.
Mm-hmm.
It's from the last song on the record, "Reluctant Hero." That's the name of the record.
Yeah,
but it's the song "Reluctant Hero." I wrote the two main riffs of that, and they're beautiful, man. And I could probably use them on Soulfly as an instrumental, but to hear them with somebody singing really cool in it. And, you know, it's, and the song is about cancer, like losing a loved one. It was beautiful, man. It was cool to watch that develop into that. So yeah, it kind of pushed me to be out of my comfort zone. Sometimes I got to write more melodic riffs, and that's fun. That's cool that I don't get to do a lot of that on Soulfly or Cavalera. It's more fucking, you know, trash stuff. But I really enjoy Killer because I hope we do more stuff with that.
Do you think you'll be able to do like a full tour? I mean, I know the schedule's crazy.
Yeah, we hope so. Like we have enough material now to headline, you know, the two records we work on the third one next year. Hopefully we can get something going.
How do you guys write for that considering everyone is so busy? Do you just show up in the studio and just write kind of in the room, or are you guys like sending riffs around kind of doing stuff like that, like remotely?
No, we don't use much of that, what they call it, files, you know. I don't have files. I don't send files out. No files with Max Cavalera. If I'm going to send you something, it's going to be on a CD, motherfucker.
There you go.
And it's going to have music on a CD.
Hope you got a CD player somewhere.
You're going to have to get buy one. Anyway, now with Killer BQ, we did jams. We jam. It's a very jammy band.
That's awesome.
And what we do is the guys come here mostly to Arizona. I have a jam pad. And we all just jam in different sessions through the year. I think we did, for Reluctant Hero, we did 4 sections in 4 different times.
Yeah.
And every time we came, we had more material. And then we just bring all that to the studio. But yeah, we don't really do file sharing and...
No, I love that, because that's, you know, that's old school, you know, and that's how I started. And, you know, a lot of stuff with the band I'm in now, Bad Wolves, is like very, you know, we using computers and stuff like that. And I miss that, just getting in the room and kind of just letting things fly, because you're always going to go places you would never think of, you know, and you kind of, especially when the band has chemistry, right? Like, this thing inspires that thing, and next thing you know, you're on some journey you can't really anticipate.
Yeah, the cool thing, like you can have like Greg will have like a riff, and he'll be doing, and I'll play his riff, but I'll play a little different, and he'll be like, dude, I like more like the way you're playing.
Yeah,
let's do the riff like you're doing, even though it's my riff, but you're doing it with a little thing in the end that sounds a little cooler. And the same goes with some of the other, you know, everybody throws a little bit on the pot, you know. Troy, I was really encouraging and pushing for Troy to write more. Like, I wanted to hear more of the prog side of Troy come out on the record, and we did. You know, it was cool. There was a song, Left to Center, that's full on Mastodon, man. I was like, yeah, fuck yeah, I love it. You know, as a fan, you know, I get to play with a guy that I'm a Mastodon fan. But you're right. If you were file sharing, doing it digitally, you would lose all that. You would not have. You'd be just like the riff, sending the riff. The guy gets the riff, and that's end of story. You know. If you're in a jam room with them on a garage or whatever, much more organic, you know, it flows so much better. And it's for this kind of music, it's super important to stay like that. You know, it's much cooler.
Sure. So The drummer of Bad Wolves, also formerly of Devil Driver, John Birkeland, very huge Sepultura, Soulfly, Max fan. He had a couple questions, so I always have to ask him anytime I have one of his favorite people on the show. So he asked one question: why was KSAD recorded in England?
That was the producer's idea. Yeah. So
is Andy Wallace, is he from England or is he American?
No, he's from Jersey. Yeah.
Oh, shit. I didn't even know that. I'm from Jersey.
Yeah, he's from Jersey. He lives in the back, you know, of farmland. He knew of the studio called Rockfield. It's a legendary studio. There's like documentaries about it. Queen recorded there, and Black Sabbath, David Bowie. You know, it's a huge, famous place. In fact, when we got there, the owner goes, "Oh, Max, this is your cabin. This is Robert Plant's cabin back in the day." I'm like, "Oh, thank you very much, man." Like, "Oh shit, fuck yeah!" You know, tried to hold my cool. You know, I was looking in the walls, see if Robert Plant wrote anything on the walls, but he didn't. You know, but it was a cool studio. It's an old kind of chalet in the middle of Wales. It's actually not even England, it's Wales.
Okay.
You know, it's like,
oh yeah, we can't say it. You get in trouble. You might get punched upside the head if you call.
Right. Yeah. Wales, yeah. Say England, Wales.
So. United Kingdom. Yeah, recording the United Kingdom.
It's cool. It's cool. It was a cool idea. And I think I credit the vibe, the sound, the experience of recording in the UK is the result of KOZD being actually different from the other records because of that. I think that's cool. I think sometimes you need to do that as a musician. Just do something different, go somewhere different and to try to reinvent yourself in a little bit, you know?
You guys recorded the Symptom of the Universe cover during those sessions, right?
Yeah. It was
So I'm in this band called the Wedding Band with Rob and Kirk from Metallica, and we play Symptoms of the Universe, and I do this little tribute to you. Like at the beginning of the song, I'll do the even though I went back and listened to the record, and you don't do it on the record, but in my mind, I like almost naturally hear you doing that. So I always do that just as a shout out, because that's like one of my favorite covers ever. That you guys did that so incredibly well.
Thank you, man. That was fun. It was Black Sabbath was actually across the road, like 1 mile from us. They're recording something. I don't know, like 95. I gotta check which record what they were doing, but we end up going there. We walk there, and there was only like a crew guy. They were out eating lunch somewhere. And the crew guys, like, "You guys want to walk around the studio?" It's like, "Fuck yeah, Black Sabbath studio." So we walk around, and I stole some Tony Iommi's picks. I was like, "Dude, there's Tony Iommi's picks laying on the table."
Hey, there's in my pocket. There's riffs in those picks. All right, you got to get that. That's where that's
magic power on the picks. It's like
exactly.
And then we had the idea to. They asked us to do a song for Nativity in Black, the Black Sabbath compilation. And I was the one, I picked Symptom. That's my favorite Tony Iommi riff of all time. To me, that riff is the most evil of all riffs. You know,
you guys like, ever play it live?
We did a couple of times, yeah. Back in the day, yeah. it's a great song. It's just a killer. Sabotage is actually my favorite Sabbath record. I heard being described as the first prog metal record, but it's definitely my favorite one.
Yeah, they started prog. He had one more. So John had one more question. He said, "Igor has stated that he was nervous during the recording of Roots and that it wasn't coming together well. Did you feel that way too?"
Nah, to me it sounded exciting. You know, it was cool. It was like, we had a really, really enthusiastic producer in Ross, and we were experimenting with low tuning. It was kind of cool to hear the Sepultura sounds with low tuning, and just felt so heavy and so brutal. And I think the end, having Andy mix the record also just put a cherry on the top, you know, because the actual the rough cuts, they sounded bad, and Andy made it clean up the poo, you know. It was like polish a turd, you know. It was like, it's cool, man, because it sounded really shitty, and then Andy made it sound fucking great. But it was on purpose, you know, like that, not sound shitty, but raw, you know, like just really raw. But yeah, it was, I don't know if noticed Igor being nervous, but I was just really enjoying the whole process.
You guys, I really appreciate it. You have a great day, and thanks again for your time. All right.
All right, man. Good to see you.
Really appreciate it. Bye-bye. Soulfly with the opening track from their forthcoming album. The song is entitled Superstition and the album is called Totem. Did I say the album twice? I don't know. Just turning in some meager broadcasting skills here. But anyway, I hope you enjoyed that conversation. Again, I apologize for it getting cut off, but I probably could have talked to Max for like 2 hours because he just seems like the type of person who just, he loves delving into the stuff and getting into the weeds and just the whole thing. So I feel like you can just, if I just kept asking questions, I think he would keep going. So the amount I got, I really appreciate. And yeah, that was just absolutely badass. But listening back, I was like, man, I must have been a little nervous because I'd say about half of that interview, I was a stumbling, stuttering, mumbling prick. I was just so... I was like, Max, you know, and it happens. All right. You know, as they say, don't meet your heroes. I say, I'm lucky enough to be able to meet some of my heroes. And it's a funny thing, right? Because in, you know, in many ways I have like this, underdog rooting for, you know, the other Sepultura, you know, because it relates kind of to my situation. But, you know, I still love Max Cavalera, and I love all his bands and everything. And it's funny because I saw Sepultura at the Belasco Theater with, what was it, Crowbar and Sacred Reich. And they were incredible, and they killed it. And then I saw Max, you know, the Cavaleras at the same venue not too long after, both shows packed, sold out. And it's, you know, everyone wins, I suppose, you know, except for the reunion stuff. And as you notice, I didn't ask about any of that stuff because, A, I think there's a lot of that out of there. And I don't know. There's nothing, you know, he's kind of spoke to it. I think the other guys spoke to it. I'm sure they're sick of it. You can tune into Blabbermouth on any given day, and I'm sure you'll pretty much hear all that stuff. So I just appreciate it. You know, it's definitely, when I started this show, I certainly didn't think getting interviews like that would be pretty much, you know, not handed to me, but definitely made very, very convenient. So shout out to Kristen Torres, badass. I appreciate it. Yeah, so I really appreciate you guys checking out the show. I have some cool interviews coming up, and tour, I guess I'm going to be leaving for the road. Not exactly sure which day, but the week of like the 20th. So I only have like a couple weeks, which, I'll tell you, this shit sneaks up on you. I have a lot of stuff I have to get done, but definitely going to do my best to stay consistent with the show. Luckily, I have a couple banked. I'm going to try and get a couple more interviews before I have to leave. We'll see. So like I said, it's going to be busy because I basically have Bad Wolves prep, tour prep, and then, God forbid, rehearsals. I have like four different days. So I'm going to be busy, all right? And that's how things go. But thank you so much for listening to the show. I love all you guys, and Mama's out.
One Hit Thunder is a podcast where we both celebrate and have a good laugh about bands and artists that had just one hit that we all know. Each week, we're joined by a guest from the world of music or comedy to learn more than you ever thought you would about some songs that you can't forget. And we decide if they brought the One Hit Thunder or were nothing more than a one hit blunder. Look, if you listen to the show, you're probably going to laugh, and I guarantee you're going to crush next time the bar has music trivia. Tag Team, Jane Child, Meredith Brooks, Looking Glass, Sean Mullins, Eiffel 65, EMF, Crash Test Dummies, Crazy Town, Chumbawamba. We have hundreds of episodes in our back catalog and a new episode each week. So pass the Dutchie, make sure you're connected, and subscribe to One Hit Thunder wherever you get your pods.